pick up your pain, bust your pain, express yourself in high pain. Dance your dance, ain't true. Go for your dream, they will come true.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your flash mob of musical administration. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff.
You know what?
And with us today is Nate Chenin. Hey, Nate.
Yeah.
We're talking about John Batiste, the new musical director of Stephen Colbert's new late night talk show, who you profiled in The Times on Tuesday this week. Why don't you talk a little bit about who John Batiste is and how he came to this point? A lot of people, I would guess, have no idea who John Batiste is and where he comes from and why he's a man of importance.
Well, this has been a big week for the rollout of John Batiste as a public figure on a mass scale. But he's been kicking around for a while. He is in his late 20s. I think he's 28 and has been playing on stages before audiences at least since he was 8. This is because he comes from a very famous musical family in New Orleans, the Batiste family.
Mm-hmm. Harold Batiste, Alvin Batiste.
He started out as a drummer and was basically thrown on stage with the Batiste Brothers Band when he was 8.
And these are actual brothers, or are they cousins from various different Batiste families?
It has changed multiple times. The core of the band was actual brothers. And then at a certain point, you know, there were cousins and uncles and, you know, all kinds of relatives once removed. And mm-hmm. I think the lore goes that, you know, they played a big show in New Orleans once with something like 22 or 23 family members on stage. And mm-hmm. from that point on, people began calling them the Batiste family instead of the Batiste brothers. So Jonathan, as he used to be known, switches to piano at, I think, age 11. On the recommendation of his mother, and very quickly shows aptitude there. He's mentored by Ellis Marsalis. He goes to the New Orleans Creative Academy. I can't mm-hmm. remember the
NOCA.
Yeah. And he, you know, very quickly becomes an adept jazz and funk and soul and sort of Professor Longhair style,
right.
New Orleans.
The whole New Orleans combination.
You know, and a very good one. You know, he's put out an album before he comes to New York at age 17 to go to Juilliard. And it was shortly after that that you and I began seeing him in New York. For me, it was usually as a sort of featured soloist in bands led by Wynton Marsalis.
I think for me too. Yeah, he would come on stage for some special occasion, some special concert, or something like that. There'd be a moment, and here this young, impressive young musician would be.
Right. My impression of him at that time, and we're talking maybe 2006. Here's a young man with a great deal of composure, with a lot of clarity of touch. He's a percussive pianist in the sort of New Orleans tradition, has sort of modern ideas, but is very much down the middle in terms of the jazz tradition. You know, he's drawing from James P. Johnson and Jelly Roll Morton and Fats Waller, and, you know, not somebody who starts at Herbie Hancock or McCoy Tyner, mm-hmm. but somebody who is really thinking about the music that was happening in New Orleans in, let's say, the 20s and 30s. You know, and so anytime you see a young musician who's kind of planted that flag, it's interesting. That's where he sort of enters the picture for jazz audiences in New York.
And the New Orleans thing gives his music not just a musical underpinning, but sort of almost like a philosophical underpinning.
Definitely.
The piece that we just heard coming in is called Express Yourself, Say Yes. It's from his most recent album, John Batiste, and his band called Stay Human. The album is called Social Music, which sounds like an important concept.
It is definitely a slogan for him. And it sort of began to coalesce for him while he was at Juilliard. I think around the time he was getting his master's at Juilliard. If you've read anything about him, you may have read this, that, you know, he used to walk the halls of Juilliard playing a melodica, which is this toy-like instrument made by Hohner. It sounds a bit like a harmonica, but it has a little piano keyboard. Mm-hmm. So it's like a, well, Stephen Colbert sort of jokingly referred to it as a face piano.
Face piano, yeah.
Batiste likes to call it a harmonica board.
Made famous by Augustus Pablo.
Yeah, and it is.
Hermeto Pascual.
And Hermeto Pascual.
And the dude from Gang of Four. And I don't know who else.
I've seen it on jazz gigs every now and again. Orrin Evans occasionally mm-hmm. has used it. But, you know, it's not an instrument that has a long history of being taken seriously. You know, it's kind of like a little bit of a novelty thing, even though it has been, you know, composers have found use for it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he used to walk around Juilliard and play whatever, improvise things on the melodica. I guess it was sort of frowned upon by the, you know, the starched shirts in Juilliard. And so one of the things that he did was with some of the musicians that he met in the Juilliard jazz program, which is not very big. One is the saxophonist Eddie Barbash. Another is the drummer Joe Saylor. These are two musicians who are now in the Late Show band with him. He would take them out and, you know, they would play on street corners and they would play in the subway and, you know, they would just try to take the music to the people. And so this idea of social music for him, like, this is not just an album title. It's not just like a hashtag. When I asked him about it this summer and suggested that, you know, by using that phrase, it sounds like some kind of corrective.
An argument, yeah.
It sounds like a reclamation of something. And he said, he pushed back slightly, just a bit, and said, I think it's a declaration. He's like, this is what I stand for.
You can evaluate him as a pianist because you're a jazz critic and you're used to doing such things. How would you evaluate him as a melodica player?
This is something that I've really come to deal with this summer because I've seen him a handful of times. And I've come to the conclusion that he's an amazing melodica player. I think this is actually sort of...
Are you talking about technically?
I think he has a personality and a voice on that instrument.
Aha.
And an expressive, some kind of expressive genius on it, really. And it comes down to not just, you know, playing his keyboard phrases on a different instrument. He has really great breath control, and he phrases in a cool way. And it's,
do you get that special sense of, oh, here's somebody playing an instrument in a way that I have not heard this instrument played before?
I think so. I mean, also in the context of the Stay Human band, it can be really special because Eddie Barbash, his alto saxophonist, is a very strong player with a beautiful tone. And Batiste, who, you know, has a little bit of training on alto saxophone as well, he gets into some back and forth, and sometimes they have these lines that kind of intertwine. And so you really get this kind of polyphonic, slithery thing that's very appealing. You know, and the melodica is a reed instrument. You know, it produces sound the same way, basically, that a saxophone does. You know, it's blown, and the reed resonating is what produces the sound. So it's not a synthesizer. You know, it has like a real physical presence. Mm-hmm. And I think Batiste has become kind of a master of this instrument. And it's certainly become his signature. You know, it's the thing that you see him playing most often. You know, at some point he realized, well, if I'm just behind the piano the whole time, then I'm not getting to be out there with the people. I'm not getting to be as much of a out front performer. So for him, he has like several lanes he can move in. One of them is as a singer, which we haven't talked about.
Right.
And he's a good singer, mm-hmm. you know. But the melodica, I think, is what makes him special.
Well, that's going to be interesting. Look, it's just a limited instrument. There's right. nothing you can really do about it. And yet he has this extraordinary facility with it and personality on it. Are we going to become used to it and then eventually tired of hearing him play it in a way that we yeah. would not become tired of hearing him play the piano?
It's quite possible, you know. But if his antenna are up mm-hmm. and to sort of to detect, you know, the, I mean, think about it this way.
the shifting
Stevie Wonder
opinions
is,
about
Stevie
Malak.
Wonder is a like a master harmonica player.
Right.
You know, it's like I've never heard a harmonica solo by Stevie Wonder that didn't make me have like faith in humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just perfect every time. You know, but it's not like he overplays it or overuses mm-hmm. it. And I feel like if Batiste can figure out the balance, you know, and this is the thing about this show. These are very short musical segments. Presumably, sometimes we'll see him playing the piano and sometimes he'll be singing and sometimes he'll be playing the melodica. So he does have that versatility. He's got a few weapons in his arsenal.
Is he thinking about making jazz approachable, or is he just not hung up on jazz as a concept, limiting or otherwise, at all?
He seems to have a multiplicity of approaches there, because on the one hand, he's proud to be a jazz musician and he will identify as such. On the other hand, it doesn't really bother him to think that jazz is sort of this rarefied intellectual form of music and that he's sort of working around it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
He self-consciously departs from the Wynton Marsalis credo, which is that, you know, jazz is a high art form that we take seriously or perish, and doesn't matter what else is happening, jazz must be upheld and defended. For Batiste, it's kind of like, well, you know, that battle has been waged successfully by my predecessors.
And won? So,
well, I don't know if he would say that it's been won, but I think he'd say that fight doesn't belong to him. He said something interesting about Wynton when I asked, because they come from the same
town,
the
right?
same suburb of New Orleans,
right.
the same community, which is Kenner, Louisiana. And they, you know, they went to NOCA. Batiste was mentored by Ellis, Wynton's father.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked about Wynton and, you know, how to differentiate their perspectives. And he said, we come from very similar backgrounds, but there's a massive cultural difference between us. And by cultural, I think he means generational. I think it really comes down to, you know, I didn't have to fight for the respect that Wynton did in the 80s. I came into this, you know, new reality. He made the point that when Wynton Marsalis went to Juilliard, there was no jazz program there.
So
whereas he met his bandmates at Juilliard.
Right. Okay. So by cultural, he's talking about the difference of jazz's place in culture.
Right.
As Wynton saw it when he was growing up and when he first came to New York versus as John has seen it.
I think there is a difference in that there's a sort of an assumption now, if someone like John Batiste is suddenly in the public eye, as he is, and he's an accomplished jazz musician, he's a respected jazz musician, I think the average person in their mind, that signals a kind of erudition and a sort of high art credential in a way that it didn't, you know, 25 years ago necessarily. They might have had different associations back then.
Well, anyway, here you see the achievement of Wynton Marsalis, the accomplishment of Wynton Marsalis, just in that difference before and after. The interesting thing is, I feel that you can go to experience very serious, perhaps intellectual, maybe kind of interior jazz, and you can be in a social situation doing that.
Right.
You can be with other people and have a group experience of one kind. The kind of music John Batiste makes is not the only
right.
social
So it sounds to me like you're maybe responding a little bit defensively in the sense that it's not as if listening to other stuff means that it's antisocial music.
Oh yeah, that's all I want to make clear. I think it's very interesting what Batiste is putting out there, the ideas that Batiste is putting out there. So in any case, why don't we hear a track from an EP that he did, recorded not in a traditional studio space.
Right. This is from My NY, which he recorded while he was at Juilliard in 2011. Every track on this EP, and I think there are 11, was recorded on the subway, meaning on actual subway cars, usually while they were in motion, you know, in the way that you would be accosted by a mariachi band or someone with a acoustic guitar. So this is the context for this music.
And the track is called I'm from Kenner. So that was I'm From Kenner by Jonathan Batiste from his EP My NY, recorded on the subway. Batiste likes to go out in public. Even in his own performances, he likes to go out in public.
Right.
He likes to break down the fourth wall and go into the audience and walk around the theater and you do these little mini parades, right?
Yeah. And there's a, you know, there's obviously all kinds of precedent for that in New Orleans culture. So it comes from a place that feels genuine. At the same time, it's pretty clearly a shtick. You know,
but a great one.
It's
when Sun Ra's band did that, sure. It was also a great thing. You know, nobody dislikes it.
Nobody dislikes it. I think that for me, I've found that the closer I am to this thing when it happens, the more fully I succumb to its pleasures.
Sure,
it's irresistible up close and in person. It's a little less irresistible from a distance, which is one of the reasons I have not responded as well to John Batiste on record as I do live.
Yeah.
It's also a question for me as he, you know, enters this new role on late night television, because if he is popping up in the audience every night, that's going to begin to feel stale. It doesn't have the element of surprise that it might, you know, in another setting. I'm curious to see how many things he pulls out of his bag of tricks.
Right. I mean, it's true. His magnetism is undeniable. Like, I'm sure we've probably been at the same festivals, like at Newport, and watched him interact with the audience. Until, it was kind of crazy. You know, it was like they're eating out of his hand.
Yeah.
Like they'd follow him anywhere, you know. And the gig per se just sort of like almost fell apart or changed shape or whatever. It was not about a bunch of musicians up on a stage anymore. It was much more immediate and interactive than that.
I was in the crowd with my two small daughters, one of whom is just started kindergarten, and the other just turned two. I had one on my shoulders, and the other I was holding her hand. And John Batiste led his parade right past us, and you know, one of his, you know, a member of his street team, handed my older daughter a little toy tambourine with the word "believe" on the membrane of the tambourine.
Wow.
In, you know, block letters. She was not the only person who received this tambourine in the crowd. And it occurred to me as I looked around, first of all, you know, my girls loved it. I mean, it was just spectacular, right? There were hundreds and hundreds of grown people in the crowd who seemed every bit as delighted as my four-year-old daughter. And, you know, this is the effect that Batiste has as a performer.
Yeah.
You know, he really reaches, you know, somehow that unguarded, you know, joyful place. And, you know, I don't want to say reduces adults to childlike behavior.
But you
maybe,
do.
Maybe elevates,
you do.
Maybe elevates them to childlike behavior. I don't know.
But maybe this divide that you're talking about, experiencing him, the magnetism of him in proximity to him versus hearing him on records and hearing him as a, you know, a recording artist at a distance. Maybe that doesn't apply quite so much in this new job. I mean, he can be Paul Schaefer.
Right.
And everything's going to be fine. I mean, the main thing is he needs to be funny. He needs to have a good rapport with the host. He needs to be musically flexible and make it clear that he's enjoying playing with whoever. Tell me what you think about that.
What else
does he need, or is that enough? Or
I think that that's pretty much enough. I think that, and that's a lot, to go back to Kenner for a second. You know, another member of the Marsalis family, Branford Marsalis, was famously or infamously the first band leader of The Tonight Show with Jay Leno and brought an incredible band to late night network television. And over the course of his 3 years in that job, it became increasingly painfully clear that he had very little chemistry with the host of the show.
Yeah.
Maybe even a kind of antipathy. So, you know,
he was very divided about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Why is he doing it?
Right.
What's it all for?
And it was pretty clear, you know, he wasn't very good at hiding, you know, his mixed feelings about that job. I think that Batiste is a willing partner. I think that he and Colbert, if you watch the clip from the interview that he did on the Colbert Report last year, you can see that they have an instant comedic bond. It's really something to see, actually, because he challenges Colbert in character, right, as Stephen Colbert, the pundit, and says, like, well, I'm a jazz musician. I like improvising. You know, maybe you like your notes. You like reading from a teleprompter or something like that. And Colbert sort of accepts the challenge, throws away his notes, and it becomes this kind of this dance.
Mm-hmm.
It's very winning. It turns out Colbert later said, and I put this in the piece, as soon as that interview ended, he thought, I have a spark with this guy. You know, we could have some fun together. I think that's not going to be a problem. And I think the more we see that develop, the better this partnership is going to be.
Yeah.
Because Batiste has the capacity to do more than just, you know, arrange pop songs for his ensemble and just play the intros and outros and interstitial music. I mean, there's a skill set he has that, you know, if they're smart over there, they'll start to utilize.
So what'd you think about the show last night after having talked to him and, you know, followed him to some degree for the last 10 years and thought about this?
I have mixed feelings about it. I think that anybody who was just watching the show out of curiosity and didn't really know anything about him, I can't see how anyone would find fault in his performance. He did a good job. The band sounded tight and super energetic. It was curious to me that in the lead up to the premiere, we were told that the musical guest on opening night would be John Batiste and Stay Human.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was this sort of assumption that, oh, what a great grand gesture. You know, we're going to raise the curtain and we're going to introduce you to our band. What a great idea. It didn't really play out that way. At some point, they announced that Mavis Staples would be the featured guest. But when the band hit for their featured number, which was a version of Sly Stone's Everyday People, it was like this crazy sort of Grammy telecast level collision of people. So, you know, Derek Trucks and Buddy Guy on guitars. Susan Tedeschi was there. Allo Black. Brittany Howard from Alabama Shakes. I'm leaving out like 10 people.
Ben Folds.
The guy from St. Paul and the Broken Bones. What struck me was this is what you do on a farewell broadcast. It's not what you should need to do on a grand opening. So it felt very messy. It had a lot of energy. The response to it, from what I can tell, has been really positive because these are great musicians. You know,
but it wasn't the kind of thing that you watch and, you know, you can't breathe because it's so fascinating and tight.
Right.
I mean, it went on for 5+ minutes. It's kind of depleting in
and
a way.
And Stephen Colbert had a chance to sing, which, you know, I get the sense.
Which he already had done in the beginning.
I get the sense that we're going to see a lot of him singing on this show.
I think so, too.
It was very sort of ragtag, and it was fun, but it was also, I think, depleting is maybe the right word. It will be cool. I'll say that this is going to happen. It will be cool to see John Batiste and his band have some room to breathe on this show and do what they do. I was looking forward to watching them do their thing in this, you know, new, big, shiny context. But, you know, that was just opening night. They'll have some time to stretch out, and I think it'll happen.
Okay, so let's hear just a short clip from the version of Everyday People, Sly and the Family Stone's Everyday People, John Batiste and Stay Human, and multiple guests on Stephen Colbert's new show.
Sometimes I'm right and I can be wrong. My own beliefs are in my song. The butcher, the baker, the drummer, and them. Makes no difference what group I'm in.
And that's our show. Thank you very much for listening. Our producers are Tamara Best and Jocelyn Gonzalez, and Nate Chenin, thanks for coming by.
Stay human, Ben.
Stay human. You can hear John Batiste and the Stay Human Band regularly on TV on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Well, we'll put some John Batiste on our Spotify playlist and maybe some other things that influenced him.
Some antisocial music.
Some antisocial music as well. And we'll see you next week.